The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices. Conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Thank you, Jason. And joining us on Campus Voices for a return engagement, one of our most popular speakers during the first season, coming to us all the way from outer space, Judy Provencal.
Hello. I don't know if I'm from outer space.
No, you're not really from outer space.
Mount Cuba Observatory, which is only, you know, 8 or 9 miles from here. It's not that far.
I know. But you really focus on what's going on in outer space.
I try, yes.
And ever since you were on Campus Voices, gosh, it was sometime during our first season, so it was probably...
It was a while ago.
Yes, in 2012.
Yeah.
Ever since you were there on with us, every time I'm up in Rockport, Massachusetts in the summer and the little... cottage that's out in the middle of a field with no lights. I look up at the stars
And
I can actually see, is that really the Milky Way?
I think it should be a requirement for everybody to go someplace where the sky is really dark. Because here in Newark, you see, what, maybe 4 stars? And one of them's a planet, so it doesn't even count. But if you go somewhere dark, you see thousands of stars. And you see the whole Milky Way going through the sky, and it just... We miss that. We don't know that we're missing it.
Well, before we get talking about all the news that's going around in astronomy, tell us about the lecture that's going to be come up on Wednesday, October 14th.
Well, one of the big things that's going on right now in astronomy is the search for Earth-like planets. And there is a satellite up there called Kepler. It's been up there for a few years now that is looking for these planets. And they found... I think the last count was like 4,600 candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, they've started finding a few that are Earth-sized or just a little bit bigger than the Earth, you know, maybe 2-3 times. And there's even a couple that I've read about recently that are in the habitable zone for their star, which means they're in a place where water can be liquid, solid, and a gas, just like here on Earth. And there was one in particular that the star is a little bit older than our sun, and the planet's a little bit bigger, but a year on that planet is like 385 days. So it's like an Earth year. And that's just amazing. But anyway, on October 14th, we're having Dr. Fergal Mullally, who is a bigwig over at Kepler. And he's going to come and talk to us about the latest results from Kepler and the search for Earth-like planets.
And this is October 14th, and where's the lecture going to be? Is it going to be on the campus?
It's at Clayton Hall at 7:30. And we asked people to pre-register. There's a website for Mount Cuba Observatory called mountcuba.org. It's all spelled out, mountcuba.org. And the only reason we ask people to do that is because Clayton Hall's limited seating. And so we just want to keep track of, it's free. So we just want to keep track of the number of people that are there. And I mean, we usually get close to the room capacity, so we just want to make sure we don't go over.
That really was some of the big news over the summer. They found, what was it? They found one great big planet that looked like it was still too young to support life, and they mm-hmm. found one, mm-hmm. like you said, that's got just a little bit bigger than Earth.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. This one that I was just reading about, the star is 1.6 billion years older than the Earth. And so you just try to picture where we'll be in 1.6 billion years from now. So if there was a civilization that evolved on that planet, what are they doing now? I mean, how far have we come in a couple hundred years? So in 1.6 billion years, maybe we don't even need a planet anymore. Maybe we're just, you know, floating around in space. I don't know, but it's just cool to think about that.
How hard are people looking for planets?
Right now, that's the biggest thing in astronomy.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I love stars. I study stars. But right now it's really hard to get money to study stars because all the money's going to looking for the next Earth. And I bet you in 20, 25 years or so, they're going to find one. They're going to find a planet that they can show has liquid water on the surface and maybe in maybe 30 years or so, they're going to find one that looks like it might have life.
We're recording this interview on September 28th, and I just discovered a news story that NASA says there's water on Mars.
Yes, I saw that a couple days ago. That's kind of cool, too, because we've always known that there's, you know, ice caps, because you can watch through anybody with a little telescope in their backyard can see the polar caps on Mars, and they get bigger and smaller, just like the Earth do with the seasons on Mars. But liquid water, that's hard, because Mars has such a low atmosphere, low density, and it's cold, so any water just freezes out or sublimates. But they think that because this water is so salty, that for short periods it can actually be liquid on the surface. And I think that's kind of cool, too, because maybe there is something still on Mars. That would be neat.
When you say it can be liquid, I mean, how warm does it have to get on Mars for this salty, salty water to be not salty, salty ice, but salty, salty water?
I'm not an expert on Mars, but Mars is kind of a fun place. In the summer, if you're in the right hemisphere in the summer, it can get up to 50 or 60 degrees at the surface of Mars.
50 or 60 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yes.
That warm. I did not know that.
It can do that. But it's only like the first 4 feet above the surface. And then it gets, because the atmosphere is so thin that the temperature drops really fast. And so your head would be really cold, but your feet could be warm. So you could have, if you get the right conditions, you could have liquid water on the surface of Mars for short periods, because the atmosphere is so thin that it wouldn't stay very long, I don't think, but.
Folks, as you can hear, Judy's filled with energy. She talks about this stuff. And one of the things that is an absolute joy here in Delaware is that the Mount Cuba Observatory has public viewing days.
Yes. Every other Monday, 7:30, I think. Or 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock it starts. And every once in a while I get roped into doing that. And if I'm the one that's doing it, then it's fun, because they give you a little talk beforehand. And then you go upstairs and use the telescope. And if I'm the one there, I use the big telescope. So if you wanted something special, you can go on the night when I'm the one doing the Mount Cuba public night, and then you can see the big telescope in action. Otherwise, they just use the smaller ones.
What size telescopes do they have there?
The big telescope, it's not really big anymore, but it's a 0.6 meter, which is about 24 inches. So, you know, about 2 feet. The mirror, that's the size of the mirror. The tube is probably 20, 30 feet long, and then it's got this huge mount that goes down through the building into the rocks underneath the building. So it's a really cool telescope. And it was built in the 1960s, so this thing is made out of steel. It's not going anywhere. And then they also have a small 4-inch telescope that's mostly the one that's used for public nights. And then they have a couple other portable telescopes that can come in and out.
And so with the little portable telescopes, would that be like what people could buy for
home?
Yeah,
you can go. There's two Celestrons and a Meade. Those are the company names. And they're on mounts with wheels. And you just roll them out and set them up, and then when you're done, you roll them back in. And so, yeah, that would be the kind of thing that people could buy.
What kinds of things, assuming that they can find a spot without lots of light pollution, what kinds of things can people see with the naked eye or binoculars?
The best thing to do with binoculars, or even just your eyes, binoculars are good too, find the moon. Because a lot of people don't realize that there's craters on the moon. And you look through it and the telescope, and it's never failed. The first time anybody's looked through the telescope when I've been there and they've seen the moon, they all go, wow. Because you can see the craters and you see the little mountains and you see all the stuff, and it's really neat.
And you can see those with like standard consumer binoculars?
Oh, yeah, you should be able to see.
Yeah, in addition to going up to a consumer grade telescope.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow. Yep.
Binoculars are also good, surprisingly, for Jupiter. I was surprised when I did this. I tested it with the Mount Cuba binoculars. It's just a little handheld pair of binoculars and looked at Jupiter, and you can see the moons. Jupiter has four big moons. They're called the Galilean moons, Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. And if you look in the binoculars, you can actually see the four little moons in a line next to Jupiter.
Wow.
I was surprised when I did that.
One of the other big news stories over the summer, as long as we're talking about our planet friends, was Pluto,
Goes
up and down to whether or not he's a planet
or
not. And the flyby this summer.
Yeah. My personal belief is that Pluto should have been grandfathered in. But I have to admit that is a completely unscientific definition and that it is what it is. But Pluto, when I give my astronomy class at Mount Cuba and we do my talk on planets, I always had to say, well, this is an artist's rendition of what we think Pluto looks like. Now I don't have to say that anymore, and that's just the coolest little thing. I can say, here is a picture of Pluto, and that's just amazing. And Pluto, completely surprising. I was watching the NASA broadcast that when they had their news broadcast, and I saw that first picture of Pluto, and I look at it, and there's no craters. I mean, we were all expecting this thing out there with, you know, craters, like the moon.
Mm-hmm.
There's hardly any craters on Pluto. So whatever, Pluto is not like the moon. It's not like a dead planet. There's something going on Pluto right now that's making the terrain be all smooth and getting rid of the craters. Yeah, that's exactly the expression that some of the people in the NASA broadcast
had. I'm sorry, I made a face, and that's not good radio, is it?
Well, it was a puzzled face, and that's what we are about Pluto right now.
What are some of the hypotheses, or people just don't know?
Oh, we just don't know yet, I don't think. I'm not a planet expert, but it seems to have something to do with ice on the surface and the ice flowing around, and maybe there's little geysers, you know, I don't know if you can call them volcanoes, but something on Pluto that can resurface it and keep it young looking, because it's out there at the edges of the solar system. It should be covered with craters. It should be really old, because that's how one way we can tell ages of bodies in the solar system is by counting craters. So you look at the Earth, and you know there's not very many craters on the Earth, and that's because we have plate tectonics, and so the surface is completely being redone all the time. And you look at the moon, and the moon has lots of craters, so you know that it's old. And what's another good one? Europa, which is one of the moons of Jupiter, has hardly any craters, and that's because its surface is completely ice, and we think that underneath is an ocean, and so the ice is always moving around, and so the craters get demolished and resurfaced and everything like that. Another fun one, now you've got me started, see, here I go, is Venus. Venus has hardly any craters on the surface. And why should it be like that? We don't know. Venus has a really thick atmosphere.
So they might burn up on the way in.
Yeah, they might burn up, but it still should have some. And it seems like the whole surface got redone, I forget how many years ago, a couple hundred million probably. And so something happened on Venus that caused the whole surface all of a sudden to be redone. Another good one for craters. Let's see. Mars actually has quite a few craters. And so it's not doing anything on its surface. But on the other hand, Mars also has the biggest volcano in the solar system.
It's actually kicking out hot stuff?
No,
like
the volcano on Mars is extinct. It's not functioning now. But it was, they think it's maybe as recently as a billion years ago, which you might not think is a long time, but not really. It was doing something, but now it's not. You're not Europa. Io, one of the moons of Jupiter, has a lot of volcanoes. It's the most volcanically active body in the solar system. It has hundreds of volcanoes.
Oh, when you say volcanoes, do you mean like we're used to on Earth?
Yeah. On Io, yeah. Spewing out hot stuff. Yep. And there's a moon of Saturn that has water geysers on it that's spewing out water vapor. And we think that's part of the reason why Saturn has rings. Titan, of course, is a very interesting planet. Because Titan, we were talking about Mars, where you could have liquid water on the surface. Titan is a moon of Saturn, and it is so cold there that it has methane, that's water, liquid, solid, and gas all at the same time. So it's a lot like Earth, because the atmosphere of Titan is nitrogen. Titan is one of the very, very few moons that actually has an atmosphere, and it rains methane on Titan. And they'd sent a little satellite that floated around in the atmosphere for a while with a parachute, and it took pictures of shorelines and rivers. And now they're finding lakes and all kinds of fun things on the surface of Titan. So if you could think of life that could evolve in really cold temperatures with methane as a basis, then there's something living on Titan.
Is that why people are looking for exoplanets, as they call them? Because they're looking for other kinds of life, or is it that the people are going, you know, we're going to mess up this planet. We got to find ourselves a lifeboat.
That might be one of the reasons. But I think what most people want to answer is the question, are we alone? And you know, a few years, even 20, 30 years ago, if you said you were looking for extraterrestrial life, you were not considered to be a serious scientist. But now everyone is into that, and everyone's trying to find another Earth and evidence of life outside of our solar system. So that's a big change.
Well, I think it's fascinating as you're just talking about some of the bodies in our own solar system. You were saying Europa, I think
Europa,
you said?
Europa, yes.
Is the one that's got ice and there might be an ocean underneath it?
Yes.
An ocean of what?
Water. Water.
You mean water?
Yes.
Water.
Yes.
Not frozen
liquid,
stuff.
Not frozen. Liquid water. And the reason is because when you look at the surface of Europa, it looks like a marble because it's so smooth because of the ice. And it's close to Jupiter. But its orbit, as it orbits around Jupiter, sometimes it's closer to Jupiter and sometimes it's further away from Jupiter. And then those other three other large moons also pull on Europa. Mm-hmm. And so if you play with Play-Doh or something and you squeeze it in your hands, it gets warm. And that's what's happening with Europa. The Jupiter and the other moons are squeezing it. And so it's getting warm. And so the water inside, underneath the ice, is liquid.
Oh, that's fascinating. So it's warm not from rocks that are melted on the inside like we're used to, but it's
tidal.
It's different tidal pull, different gravitational pull.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I know here on Earth, we have those are they geysers that are down deep in the ocean that are spewing out stuff, and there's really strange life that lives around the geysers that never sees light. Europa could have the same thing. That would be really fun. I know they're working on some kind of a probe to go to Europa, but the problem is you got to get through all that ice, and we're not really sure how thick it is. So they are practicing down in the South Pole. There's a lake that's underneath the ice in the South Pole, and so they're figuring out a way to burrow down into the ice and get into the lake and then swim around with their little probe and see if they can find anything. So that would be really cool if we could do that at Europa.
All this stuff just is fascinating. It's all like variations on a theme within our solar system, depending on how close to that big yellow star you are. Wow.
Yeah, like there's not that much difference between the Earth and Venus as far as size goes. You know, and Venus is a little bit closer to us, closer to the sun than we are. But Venus turned out for some reason to be completely different as far as its environment than the Earth. You wouldn't want to go there. If anyone tells you that global warming is crazy, and here I get into politics now, you just tell them you got to look at Venus. Venus's atmosphere is carbon dioxide. Venus's surface temperature is 900 degrees Fahrenheit. It shouldn't be warm like that if it had an atmosphere like Earth. And so the reason it's so warm is because the carbon dioxide is trapped the energy and won't let it out. And so the surface temperature is 900 degrees.
All these things we're talking about just in our own solar system, what can somebody see at home out of these things?
I mean, they can't see.
You can't see like whether or not Europa's smooth or cratered, can you?
No, you can't. Not with a small telescope. You can with like Hubble or some of the bigger telescopes in Hawaii or places like that. If you want to go outside tomorrow morning before the sun comes up, you will see Venus and Jupiter. And I think Mars is up right now in the morning. And Venus is really bright. Venus is always bright because of the clouds. That's the other thing. Venus is completely cloud covered. So light doesn't ever directly hit the surface of Venus. So Venus is always very bright to us because it's reflecting a lot of light back. And so look over where the sun's going to come up and you will see this really bright star in the sky, and that is Venus. And Jupiter is not that far away. It's going to be a little bit fainter than Venus. And Mercury, I think. Mercury's tough because Mercury never gets maybe 10 degrees above the horizon, maybe as much as 20 sometimes. It's never very far from the horizon, and it's not as bright. The first time I saw Mercury, I said, that's it, because I thought it would be easier to find. It's not very easy, but if you take Venus and Jupiter and you draw a line down towards where the sun is going to be coming up, the planets always lie on the same line. So Mercury will be somewhere near that line, and you can see those three planets right now.
But really, the moon's the only thing close enough to us that you can, with a backyard telescope, see the features of the...
Jupiter, you can see cloud bands on the surface of Jupiter with a small telescope.
What about Mars?
Jupiter's huge. Mars, you can see the polar caps. You can see little dark spots. But it tends to be better when Mars is close to the Earth. Because, you know, everybody's moving around the sun. And so sometimes Mars is way over here, and we're on the other side of the sun. That's not a good time to look at Mars with the telescope. You want to look at Mars when we're both on the same side of the sun. So Mars is fairly close to the Earth. Then you can see the polar caps and you can see the dark spots on this that people used to think were plant life on Mars. Venus, you can tell phases. because Venus is closer to the sun than we are. So sometimes you see a crescent, sometimes you see half a planet, sometimes you see almost full planet. So that depends on where Venus is in its orbit. Mercury does the same thing. Saturn is up right now at night, actually, right before. If you go right after sunset, look a little bit to the left of where the sun just set, you'll find Saturn. Saturn is really nice in a small telescope because of the rings. The rings are just gorgeous. And they're easy to see in a small telescope. And you can see Titan, too. Titan is a pretty bright moon, and that's easy to find. The other planets are kind of faint. And Pluto is hard. I mean, even when I use my big telescope at Mount Cuba to look at Pluto, it looks like a star. It's not very impressive. The reason to tell how you tell Pluto is you take a picture of the region where you think Pluto is one night, and then you go back a couple days later, you take another picture of the same region, and then you compare the picture, and Pluto moves, and the stars don't. That's how that works. Otherwise, it just looks like a fleck. But now we have those gorgeous pictures. So now I can say, no, it's just a fleck. Now it's a really pretty planet.
Are you still teaching those observational astronomy courses for the university?
Yes.
Out at Mount Cuba?
I do that every Thursday nights. So if it's clear, can come on out.
We're talking with Judy Provencal. As you can hear, she's one of the 6 a.m. DJ's favorites when she's on my show because she's so enthusiastic.
Yeah, I can talk about astronomy all day long. That's easy.
Well, it's been 4 years or so since we've chatted here with you on Campus Voices. And when you were here before, you had been recently to Argentina and some other places to look at the skies. Mm-hmm. Have you had any interesting trips since then?
I went to Hawaii in August. But the question you have to ask about a person that goes to Hawaii in August is why? Why do you want to go to Hawaii in August? You want to go to Hawaii in January or February, not in August. But there was a meeting in Hawaii, so I had to go in August.
Did you get on the scope? On the
telescope? I didn't. And I actually missed the meteor shower, too. But the skies, I did go out one night. There was a beach across the street from the hotel, so I went out to the beach and looked out over the sky. And, oh, my gosh, it was just gorgeous. The meeting was on Oahu in Honolulu, and most of the big telescopes are in Hilo. And that's normally where I go, is to Hilo. But this time I didn't get to go to Hilo. I'm trying to go to, I think I'm going to go to Brazil in December or January to work with a colleague down there.
What about, are you still doing your collecting of data about the vibrating stars?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'm actually working on planning another run. I just got an email from one of my colleagues who has a very interesting star that he wants to look at. And the deadline to submit to the United States telescopes, the NOAO telescopes, is the 30th. So what is today? Today's like the 28th?
Yeah. We're talking to you on the 28th.
Yeah.
Will air later than that.
But. Okay. Well, the next 2 days, I will be working very hard on this proposal to get it submitted by the 30th.
Well, I think that this project, you might want to refresh people's memory that they might not have been listening 3.5 years ago.
They weren't listening?
I mean,
they don't remember?
This is such a cool project you have where you're collecting data from telescopes all over the world.
Yes. We use the Earth as a rotating platform. I talked a little bit about Kepler, the Kepler satellite. And what Kepler is doing is it's just sitting out in space and it's taking pictures all the time of the same stars over and over and over. And what we're doing here on Earth is we're trying to do the same thing, but the Earth is turning. And so if I'm here at Mount Cuba and I'm observing on my telescope, I have to stop because the sun comes up. And I know I like the sun. The sun is good. I like daylight and we need it here on Earth, but the sun is kind of annoying to an astronomer. Okay? It would be nice if the Earth didn't. But anyway, so what you got to do is you got to call up your friend in Texas, for example, and you say, Mike, I'm done observing now. Can you start? And so he starts observing the star. And then we call our friend in Hawaii, and they start observing. And then you get another telescope in China or Korea. And then you go all across the globe until you come back around and it's night the next time here. And so I start again. And so we just keep everything going so that we're observing 24 hours a day. And what we're looking at are these stars that are, they're called white dwarf stars. And the sun is making one right now. It's like, you know, everybody watches CSI and the crime drama, forensic science television shows. That's kind of like what we're doing. A white dwarf is a stellar corpse. So you find this corpse and you want to find out how it died. So you dig around in the guts and you find out what it ate for lunch. And then you figure out exactly how it died. And then you can turn around and you can say, okay, this is what the sun is doing right now. Because the sun is making a little white dwarf in its core right now as we speak. And so we're working on figuring out what's going on inside of stars.
Judy Provencal, forensic astronomer. But
it's true. It is what it is.
Our buddy, the sun, is not going to turn into a white dwarf in the next 10 years.
Oh, no, we have a while. In about a billion years, the sun is going to start to get bigger. And in about 3 billion years, we're not going to want to be here anymore because the sun is going to become what's called a red giant. And if you go out in the next couple months, everyone knows the constellation Orion. The upper left shoulder of Orion is a star called Betelgeuse. Betelgeuse is a red giant. If you took Betelgeuse and you put it in the solar system where the sun is right now, it would fill the solar system out to the orbit of Mars. That's kind of what's going to happen to the sun. So we could be orbiting inside the sun. It would not be a good thing. This would not be a place we want to live. So maybe it's a good thing we start looking for other Earths now so that we can get there and get in time.
So we've got about a billion years.
Yeah, we're okay. We're okay. You don't have to worry about it. But then you got to think about that other planet where the star is, you know, 1.6 billion years older than us. Maybe they were starting to think about what's going to happen to their star. They only have 2.4 billion years before they have to leave.
Hmm. In addition to being an astronomer and a horseback person, sounds to me like Judy Provencal is also ready to start booking interstellar travel for different civilizations.
Oh, yes, that would be, we could do it now. I mean, it would take a long time to get there.
Take a couple of generations living in a space capsule.
Yeah.
Space station or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to figure out a way to assemble a very large ship out in. You couldn't launch a big ship from the surface of the Earth, so you'd have to put it together, kind of like they've done with the International Space Station. And then you'd have to have a way to grow your own. It has to be self-contained. Because once you start going in space, you know, you keep going. You don't stop until you want to stop. And so like the Pioneer probes and the Voyagers and all those, they're still going. They're out there. There's one of them. I forget which Voyager it was, but it just crossed the plane between the space that's dominated by the sun, and then the space, the interstellar space. And so that's the first thing that's ever really left the solar system.
Are we still hearing from that Voyager?
Oh, yeah, still hearing. They're still watching it. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Some of the instruments are still working. It has a nuclear power supply, so it can keep going for a long time. And it just was taking some measurements where they could tell that the particles changed from the solar wind type thing to interstellar space. And so that's a pretty cool result. The first thing that's ever left the solar system.
Well, Judy, every time you come down to talk with us, the time just flies by. Just for fun, one last thing to talk about. People have been fascinated by the stars and everything that happens in the skies for millennia.
Yes.
And we're talking to you, as has become abundantly clear, on September 28th. And last night, September 27th, the moon dripped red with blood. Man, that had to be scary for people years ago before they knew what was going on.
They did not know that it was just the Earth's shadow. Solar eclipses, lunar eclipses, comets even, were harbingers of doom back then, because they didn't understand what was going on. I mean, they thought that the Earth was flat and that everything was perfect in heaven. And so
The dome of stars,
mm-hmm. Nothing ever changed. And so when something changed, that was a big problem. Now we understand it a little bit better, I hope. And so we know that the moon didn't really drip blood.
But it's one of the things that it's a primordial thing in all of us to look up.
Yes.
And we feel that sense of awe, but then also want to understand.
Yes, definitely. To me, like I said at the beginning, going someplace where the sky is dark and you can see the Milky Way, it really makes you feel part of something much bigger than just the Earth. And I think that's important for people to do too. We live on this little dust speck that's in a galaxy that's not even a spectacular galaxy. There's millions and hundreds of millions of other galaxies out there, and it's just a huge universe. And it makes me feel small sometimes, but in a good way, you know, to know that I'm part of something much bigger. And the other cool thing that I think about sometimes is when the universe started, the theory is that hydrogen and helium were created, and then the universe got too cool, and so none of the other particles were made. Everything else heavier than helium comes from the center of a star. So all of the carbon in your body and all of the iron and all of that stuff comes from the stars. And so we're connected together to the universe that way.
I think on that deep point, I'll bid Judy Provençal farewell. Thanks for coming in, Judy.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.